You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com, with MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers edition. We're going to be joined by Adam McKelvey, our fine Brewers beat writer, talking about a very solid Milwaukee team, 10 games over 500 and in first place at the All-Star break. I think some people were still waiting to see how they would do if they could hold together, and they come out and they go 18-12 in the first 30 games in the second half, and they've owned the L.A. Dodgers, a weekend sweep at Dodger Stadium. You don't do that very often after taking two out of three at Miller Park. Adam, how much fun do you think those Brewers have had playing the Dodgers lately? I mean, that's got to be huge for the confidence.
It is huge. I love that their catcher, Jonathan Lucroy, actually admitted that this was a big deal in saying after they finished the sweep that this is a potential postseason matchup. And if the Brewers get to where they want to go and the Dodgers get to where they want to go and those teams do see each other again, the Brewers should enter that matchup with a lot of confidence. Ron Renneke, the manager, didn't really want to have much of that. He was looking at the time they had 37 regular season games to go, and he pointed out, rightly, that those games are just as important and that they need to treat them as such and not act like they won anything by sweeping the Dodgers. But I mean, let's be honest. It's a big deal to face, in the span of 10 days, the best team in the league, record-wise, at the start of that span, the Dodgers, and you run into Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw four times in those six games, and you come away winning 5-6. There's no reason that the Brewers shouldn't feel pretty good about that. And at the end, if they get to where they want to go, I think we'll all look back at those games as a big turning point.
Well, and, just not that you need to throw anything extra onto that, but, this is a Brewer team whose rotation has been battling a little bit of injury with up Matt Garza for a while now. Kyle Loesch hurts his ankle, misses a start. But in that series at Dodger Stadium, with Jimmy Nelson, Yovani Gallardo, and Willy Peralta, 20 innings, only three runs. Do you think across the board baseball fans really realize how strong the Brewers' rotation has been from the start of the year? To me, that's the biggest key for the Brewers has been that rotation.
And I agree with you. Mike Bauman, our fine columnist, did in the Brewers' last homestand a column on this same topic, arguing that they're not where they are without the rotation. That's a clear strength. I think the reason they don't get the love is they don't have the big-name guys. They don't have a Wainwright. They don't have a Clayton Kershaw. They don't have an all-star, ace-type, no-hitter-type pitcher. But what they've got is five guys who are solid. Willy Peralta has been kind of jockeying for the big league lead in wins. And I know we're not using wins to measure pitchers, but it shows you that he's pitched well enough to put the team in position to win a lot of games. Garza is the guy who sort of has the no-hit threat. He's had a couple bids go deep into games, and he was pitching really well before he strained the oblique muscle. Kyle Loesch is just kind of steady and boring. He just gets through games, but he doesn't do it in a flashy way. And I think Yovani Gallardo has kind of developed into the same guy. He used to be more of a power strikeout pitcher. Now he'll strike out three guys in a game, but he'll get you to the seventh inning with a chance to win. So, they're just not flashy. But they are getting a little bit more love lately because I think people are noticing the team a little bit more now. They haven't fallen off like I think a lot expected them to after they got off of that great start in April. And the players, the hitters, are starting to talk about the starting pitchers a lot more, in terms of they're the reason the Brewers are in the spot they're in.
Well, as far as showing love goes, you can't go any further than I just did. I was taking a look at MVP candidates in the National League. It seems to me, you look at the American League, Mike Trout's a clear frontrunner. National League, I'm not really sure who it is. You have Giancarlo Stanton putting up the big numbers, but the Marlins, are going to have to step on the gas to make the playoffs, and I think that's a big factor. And so when I'm looking at teams that can make the playoffs, I come up with your guy, Jonathan LaCroix, as a very, very strong MVP candidate. Matter of fact, I had him first right now going into the last 6 weeks of the season. Am I crazy?
No, I think I'm writing the same thing this week. And I actually asked him about it, and not surprisingly, he wants absolutely nothing to do with that conversation. He said literally all he cares about is winning a ring, and he could care less about the MVP race. But because it's a wide-open race, because he's been really good, and I think because he gets bonus points for being a catcher, the same way Yadier Molina has in the last couple of years when he's been in the debate, I think LaCroix is a strong candidate. You know, he's on a pace to break the record for doubles by a primary catcher, which is held by Pudge Rodriguez. That's a pretty good company to be in. And at the same time, he's still doing what he's doing defensively. He seems to be getting better defensively. He ranks among the highest, if not the highest, in pitch framing. He's getting better at calling games. He's just become a really, really good all-around player. And that MVP race is going to be really interesting in the National League. As you say, there's not anyone really running away with it. Some of the big guns have been hurt. So I think LaCroix is as strong a candidate as any right now.
Hey, I did not go this way, but I mentioned 10 different candidates, and I threw Carlos Gomez in there as a guy that would definitely receive some consideration to be somewhere on my 10-man ballot. But I overlooked Francisco Rodriguez. I mean, if you look at what he did stepping in for Jim Henderson, who, as a footnote, had his shoulder surgery this week, had the labrum cleaned up. Would you be wrong to talk about K-Rod as another guy that should maybe receive some MVP love in a wide-open race?
I mean, I think there's a possibility for some votes. I'd always go for an everyday player. I don't know where you fall on that, Phil, but I think the guys that are out there every day are, you know, just generally speaking, more valuable to what a team does. I think it has to be an absolutely extraordinary case for it to be a pitcher, which, you know what, in this case, Clayton Kershaw might be in that, you know, he deserves to be in that conversation because the things he is doing are extraordinary. He's doing it for one of the best teams in the National League, and he's doing it in a year, like we've been talking about, where there's not a hitter that's clearly jumped to the front of the pack that's doing something that's, you know, so remarkable that they're the shoo-in for MVP. So I think, you know, I think he'll get some votes, but those other players, I'd rank ahead of him. Carlos Gomez had a really good case going. He's cooled lately, and it's led to all these questions of, does he need to start being more selective at the plate, take some pitches? Brewers don't think so. They think that he's gotten good when they turned him loose. He goes up there looking for a first pitch to hack, and he does it. And when he is that super aggressive guy, that's when he has his success, and they're not about to start to try to change him. He's just going to have to hit his way out of the kind of a little mini funk he's been in the last few weeks.
I'm with you on pitchers, but I will, I would not vote for a pitcher for MVP, but I will slide him onto the ballot. Justin Verlander won just 3 years ago, so I know some of our voters will do it, but you know, it's got to be really an exceptional case, I think. One last thing, still sticking with the pitching side. Mike Fiers, well, what a game he pitched against the Blue Jays. All year long I've been watching the Blue Jays just knock the ball around, and you think they come to Miller Park, similar to Rogers Center. They've got to be excited to get there. He gives up 2 hits in 7 innings against them. What is this guy doing so well now? It seems like a guy who's learned from some lumps he took earlier in his career.
Well, you know, he's a guy who's deceptive, and a couple of comps. There's a pitcher, Josh Colemanter in Arizona, similar overhand delivery. And then Chris Young of the Padres and then the Mets is another guy who kind of went right over the top. And Fiers is that way, and the hitters just don't see the ball. And he's 88, 89. He can throw a fastball right down the middle, and guys swing and miss at it. Stuff you don't see from any other pitcher, and it's because they just can't see it. So when Mike Fiers came up in 2012, the first time for the Brewers, he went on a really long run, and it was when teams hadn't seen before, unfamiliar with that delivery, and really struck. When he saw him the second time around, then things started to swing back in the direction of the hitters. So the key for him now is he stays in there, and we'll see what happens because Matt Garza is working his way back. But if he starts to see teams multiple times, the key for him is going to be, is his command better now than it was in 2012? And Ron Reneke has made the case that it is, that he's a better pitcher now than he was. But you're right, his success has been remarkable. And, you know, he strikes out 14 against the Cubs a couple of starts ago. You look at the pitchers who struck out 14 this year, it's John Lester, Scherzer, Jose Fernandez. You know, it's guys that are some of the best pitchers in baseball, and then here's my Flyers. And he does it in six innings. And it's a list of 14 strikeouts in six innings, and you're talking about Nolan Ryan and Randy Johnson. So he's been a really fun guy to watch pitch and then sit at your computer and look up all the weird stats and all the weird historical comparisons he's drawing based on how well he's been doing.
Yeah, well, it will be fun to see if he can stay in there when those other guys get back. I don't know how you take a guy pitching that well and move him aside, but unless they go to a six-man rotation, something's going to have to give. So thanks
well,
so much.
Phil, you've seen it enough where we're a couple of weeks away from Garza being back, and you worry about that now, and it makes no sense because he rolls an ankle next week, and then the decision becomes moot, and you know it's kind of made for you. So I think that's the way they're looking at it. They'll make the decision when they make it. And if he needs to leave the – I mean, Garza's coming back in the rotation. He's a $50 million guy. They want him to be – if they get to the postseason, he'll be key to that. And, you know, he's going to have to go. And it might be Mike Fiers. We'll see. For now, though, he's definitely making a little national name for himself.
Well, thanks a lot, Adam. This has been MLB.com Brewers Extra. Thanks for listening.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game stream live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.